You're listening to a Davenport After Dark podcast. Tune in every Thursday night at 10 o'clock on News Talk 106 to 108.
You smell it! Napalm, son! Nothing else in the world smells like that! I love the smell of napalm in the morning. You know, one time we had a hail bomb? For 12 hours, when it was all over, I woke up. We didn't find one of them, not one stinking big body. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? The whole hill. Smells like... victory.
One of the most famous scenes from Francis Ford Coppola's film Apocalypse Now with Robert Duvall. But it was long before the film and long before the Vietnam War that napalm was first developed and used against civilians, eventually becoming a cultural symbol of the misguided use of power by the US government and others. Robert M. Neer is author of a new book, Napalm, An American Biography, and he joins us now. And good to have you with us, Robert.
Thanks very much for having me.
Can we go back to when it was first developed? Who developed it and why?
This weapon was initially developed as part of a secret government and laboratory research collaboration between Harvard University and the U.S. government in 1942, during World War II. They were looking for new kinds of incendiary weapons that they could use against the Japanese, but that wouldn't require rubber, because after the attacks on Pearl Harbor, it was very difficult for the United States to import large amounts of rubber, which up until then had been the basic substrate for incendiary devices that were sticky and consequently very effective.
So initially, when the scientist got the brief, he did know that it was for the use of weapons, that that they were looking for improved weapons.
Yeah, during World War II and in the years, about a year and a half before the war began for the United States, the U.S. government very deliberately adopted a nationwide collaboration between universities and the government to try to develop technologically advanced weapons that could be used in what they foresaw would be a tremendously difficult fight. And so they assembled many of the leading chemists, and one area of particular investigation was incendiary weapons. And it was through that kind of government-organized military-academic collaboration, which today is widespread and almost a matter of course, but then was still a very relatively new kind of development. It was through that sort of relationship between universities and the government that this weapon was initially developed. Mm.
Because when we think of attacks on Japan and in World War II and in 1945, inevitably we think of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but in fact it was a napalm bomb and the dropping of a napalm bomb that had that caused more casualties for civilians in Tokyo.
Well, yes. I mean, not just one. That was a big difference between napalm and the atomic weapons. I mean, it was about 250,000 or so small 6-pound napalm bombs dropped by several hundred American bombers that started a firestorm in Tokyo on the night of 9th of March 1945, which to this date remains the greatest single human-created cataclysm in the history of warfare and in the world. I mean, more people died in the firestorm at Tokyo that night than were killed in either of the atomic explosions at Hiroshima or Nagasaki. So many small chemical devices that started all those fires were actually more effective than the atomic weapons, and it suggests that perhaps even without the development of atomic weapons, cataclysms like that, which were wrought on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, could still be an aspect of our world, I mean, even if there were no nuclear weapons, for example.
And yet it feels like we didn't really hear about it up until the Vietnam War.
I mean, that's a really interesting point. Yeah, napalm was very popular, basically. It was a hero, you might say. Well, I say in the book that I wrote, it was a hero when it was winning. I mean, it helped win World War II, which was a tremendous achievement for the Allies. Subsequently, in Korea, many, many thousands of tons of napalm were used to help achieve at least the stalemate in Korea, which ended the open hostilities there. And it was used by many other countries, the United Kingdom, France, previously colonialized countries, which became independent and were then able to follow their previous overlords in using this weapon, all around the world. And it wasn't really until the Vietnam War when napalm, in effect, became kind of, you might say, a scapegoat or a symbol of an American defeat, that it became such a kind of pariah weapon, to the point where today napalm use generates enormous condemnation and a kind of collective revulsion, which makes it practically impossible for military services to use it.
How widely was it used during the Vietnam War?
It was very widely used. I mean, more napalm was used in Vietnam than in any previous conflict. But despite the best efforts of the people who were using it, and despite the incredible volume of napalm that was delivered, it wasn't able to achieve a victory, and certainly not able to achieve the military successes in previous conflicts. In addition, as a really remarkable aspect of the story, people who were opposed to that war for a variety of reasons seized on it as a symbol of everything that they saw wrong about American involvement there and brought it to prominence. The media, the sort of radio, television, print, also started to discuss napalm and its effects on civilians in a way that after Vietnam was done to a much larger audience through movies like the one that you played at the beginning, Apocalypse Now, mm-hmm. And kind of brought the presence of napalm in a much more immediate way to hundreds of millions of people around the world than had ever been done before.
And yes, as far as I know, it continued to be used. It was used during the Iraq War in 2003 by the American forces.
It was. And one thing that's very interesting there, though, is that the U.S. military denies that it uses napalm because it took the position, which is actually sort of at variance from the etymology of the word, that because the firebombs that they were using in Iraq were slightly different chemical composition from the firebombs that were used, for example, by the U.S. In Japan, that it wasn't quote-unquote napalm. It was quote-unquote firebombs. And I think that speaks to the power of this global civilian society that has decided that this type of weapon is particularly offensive to the degree that it raises tremendous political problems for any entity that wants to use it. So yes, incendiary gels, incendiary weapons, thickened petrochemical-based fire weapons, which is all that napalm means. And napalm, the term, according to the guy, the Harvard scientist who invented it, just means a thickened petrochemical, was used in Iraq, and it became a big political issue a few years after that during the general election in England. But it was used in Iraq and denied by the military, whereas in World War II, in Vietnam, in Korea, and in many other parts of the world, for example, in Kenya, during the colonial wars there, nobody would deny that napalm was used. And that speaks to a big change in the way that the weapon has been perceived since its creation. Mm.
And at this stage, what does the U.S. say about it? Have they agreed to no longer use it?
Well, it's interesting. For a long time, several decades after it was created, there were no real international covenants under international law which governed the use of napalm. And it was only, as I mentioned, after its after the U.S. defeat in Vietnam and the kind of identification of that defeat intimately with napalm, that a civil international law civil effort began to regulate it specifically. In 1980, the United Nations adopted a treaty which made it illegal, a war crime, to use napalm or other kinds of incendiary weapons against concentrations of civilians, so-called. So it's still perfectly legal under international law to use napalm on the battlefield, but not, for example, to destroy a city or concentration of civilians, even if there are military facilities located there. The United States signed that treaty only recently on President Obama's first full day of office. So several decades after the United Nations adopted that, which in turn was several decades after the weapon was created. Today, the United States has signed it, although it signed it with a caveat, which says that it will follow the treaty only so long as, in its discretion, following it reduces civilian casualties more than not following it.
What about the scientist himself? You often hear about these people who developed a weapon like this but didn't know what exactly they were developing it for, or didn't know how it would be used and abused, and afterwards regretted it and said they would never have done so if they had the choice all over again. What has he said about it?
Louis Caesar, who was really a very long serving teacher of undergraduates at Harvard, taught many thousands of undergraduates chemistry. Many of them became doctors, since chemistry is one of the crucial courses that future doctors have to take, and was really recognized for his teaching ability, said that he never envisioned that it would be used against people. Babies and Buddhists was the term that he used. At the same time, he participated in a number of tests that were conducted against residential buildings to test the effectiveness of napalm compared to other types of incendiary devices. And so while it's certainly possible that there was no expectation that it would be used against anything other than structures, it's sort of strange credulity to imagine that it couldn't have been anticipated. Later on, during the Vietnam War, when the protests against the weapon specifically used in Vietnam became very widespread, and people put the question to him directly, he said that he had no particular responsibility for the way that the weapon was used. The analogy that he cited was that a person who made a rifle didn't have direct responsibility for the fact that it was used to assassinate President Kennedy. So that was his position, was that he had done his patriotic duty to develop a technical solution to a particular problem, and its implementation and the way it was used was really the responsibility of the people that were using it and the law. And the law, because as I say, under international law, certainly during World War II, there was no legal standard to prevent the firebombings that were conducted. And even today, it's legal to use those kinds of weapons in battlefields.
Well, your new book, if people want to find out more about it, is called Napalm, An American Biography. And Robert M. Neer, thank you so much for joining us here on the program this evening.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. And I'm a supporter of your program, so have a good rest of the program.
Cheers. Thanks, Bob. That's Robert Neer joining us, and the book is called, as I said, Napalm, An American Biography.
That was a Davenport After Dark podcast, live every Thursday night at 10 p.m. on News Talk 106 to 108 FM.